Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Locked and loaded for the playbook here on a Wednesday on Patriots.com radio. John Rook with you. There's a ton of stuff to get to today, so let me preface this by saying we've been talking about over the course of the last 3 or 4 shows about giving today's program a name. Some of you have already tweeted forth with your suggestions, and I would like to continue that process today. So if you, we have Nitpick Tuesday. We have Prediction Thursday. If you have a mention, a potential name for a hashtag that we can use to promote our Wednesday Patriots Playbook program, I want you to tweet it to me today. At JR Broadcaster is the tweet address. But if you come up with the right one, as Kevin has said earlier, we'll send you a copy of the, Patriots yearbook for this year. All right. The one that we end up selecting. You'll get a copy of the media guide slash yearbook for 2014 for the Patriots. So it's a contest day today. It's a version of Game Show Wednesday, which we only play on off weeks or playoff weeks, of course. So hashtag Game Show Wednesday has already been taken. That one's not going to work. But for today only, we're going to play Name the Show. Name the Show. Name Wednesday. Hashtag something Wednesday in the Patriots playbook. So I want you to come up with your ideas. Send them forth at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. Just send them at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. And Kevin and I will pick the one that we think fits the day the best. We will contact you again via Twitter and get your information, and we'll send you a copy of the media guide. So that's the first thing on the agenda today. The second thing on the agenda today is we're locked and loaded with guests. That doesn't mean there's not going to be time for you. But I can tell you that coming up in 10 minutes, Mark Schlereth from ESPN and ESPN Radio, he's going to join us on the program at 2:40. Bob Gretz from BobGretz.com. He's one of the leading bloggers for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's going to join us. If you haven't seen his website, I suggest you check it out. It's Bob Gretz, G-R-E-T-Z.com. He covers the Chiefs rather thoroughly. Does a good job with them. A lot of his stuff is by a subscription service, but you get enough, you know, just by clicking on his free page to understand where he's going. And maybe you decide you want to you follow him along. Then in the 3 o'clock hour, or right before the 3 o'clock hour, our own Eric Scalavino will join us from the locker room to get the latest from the locker room and the practice report from today. And the music is blaring outside the stadium fields here, as you might guess, getting ready for the noise at Arrowhead Stadium on Monday night. Adam Teicher from ESPN.com, who covers the Kansas City Chiefs, he'll join us in the 3 o'clock hour today. And then finally, to wrap it all up, the one and only Field Yates, formerly of Patriots.com, formerly of ESPN.com, now an ESPN NFL insider. Field is going to join us in the 3 o'clock hour, approximately 3:30 our time, to hit on some of the Patriots news and other things going on around the NFL. So you can see we're locked and loaded today, which means we need to get right to the point. The point I want to get to you today is this, in addition to Name the Show Wednesday here, Game Show, our version of Game Show Wednesday. I'm going to commit heresy. I started this last year. Some of you may know where I'm going. This was an argument that we came up with last year that I thought that I saw the beginning of the end for Tom Brady. And even though that's not what I was saying, and it's not what I'm saying now, because I'm going to put the question to you in just a moment, and this is one of the things that I'd really like for you to participate in via email or via Facebook or via Twitter today, and then we will squeeze in as many phone calls as we can in and around our guests as time permits today. Hey, it's just a popular thing to be in the playbook. You got to be in the playbook. If you're not in the playbook, you're missing out. What can I tell you? But here's the thought. Last year, We talked about how, and I talked specifically about how I thought Tom was, I think we were beginning to see the start of the end of a great career. It happens to all great players. That doesn't mean I don't like him any less. That doesn't mean that I don't think he's still the answer now for the Patriots. But others are starting to pick up on this. We talked a little about this yesterday. I think we touched on it briefly a little last week as well. And honestly, you know, now is as good a time as any to kind of throw this out to you. Again, let's look at what the trend is. In 2011, Brady completed 65.6% of his passes, 39 touchdowns, 12 picks, 13 yards per completion. Quarterback rating was 105.6. In 2012, completion percentage shrank to 63%, negligible, but it's definitely a downward turn. He was down in touchdowns to 34. He was also down in interceptions to just 8, so statistically a good year, but he was also down in yards per completion, he was down in yards per game, and he was down in QB rating to 98.7. In 2013, last season, his completion percentage was down to 60%, 60.5 to be exact. Touchdowns were down to just 25, interceptions back up to 11. Yards per completion down to 11.4. Yards per game down by almost 30 yards per game, and his QB rating was down to 87.3. And then this year, it's just 3 games in, but his completion percentage is under 60% at 58.8. 3 touchdowns. He does have 0 interceptions. His yards per completion down another 2 yards per completion at 9.4. He's only averaging 210 yards passing per game, which is 60 fewer than he averaged last year. And his QB rating is down another 5 points, 82.9. Okay, you can see the trend, right? It's definitely a downturn. Now, my question to you, we don't need to go into the argument that Tom Brady is fading. We don't need to go into the argument that Tom Brady is in the twilight of his career. This we already know. He's 37. He doesn't have the weapons that Peyton Manning does. I think we can all agree on that one. What I'm asking you is this still a Tom Brady? As he presently consists, is this still a Tom Brady that can lead the Patriots to where they want to go? And that is, of course, the Super Bowl. It's very simple. Now, you may have your reasons for that being the case, and you may have your reasons for that not being the case. That's what I want to hear. I really want to find out from you where we sit as a fandom. You know, those of you that are into this program and you try to follow it as much as you can, I realize it's not entirely a scientific poll, but I really want to know where our listeners are on the whole issue of Brady's getting older. You cannot do anything with the fact that age and time march on. But the fact remains is that the Patriots could be doing things to help him. And my major point is, and I'm sure this is the point for a lot of you, is that the Patriots aren't doing what they could be, at least in our opinion, what they could be doing to help him, to help mitigate his diminishing skills. They're just not. If they were, I don't believe that they would have sold off on Logan Mankins as quickly as they did. That's just one example. There are others. So is Tom Brady then your answer? Can he still lead this team where they want to go? And for the first time, maybe ever, I'm wondering, and this was a couple of topics today on Sports Talk Radio in the Boston area, and I heard it, and I'm thinking, and I realize it's not completely stupid, because we all know what the Indianapolis Colts ended up receiving when Peyton Manning went to Denver, ended up in Denver. Colts got a good return on that. Is it possible? And we know what, you know, Carson Palmer, you know, delivered to Cincinnati when they let him go and he ended up in Arizona. It's not inconceivable that if this team continues to flounder, or, you know, struggle this year and not gel like many of us still think it can, it's not inconceivable to see the Patriots consider, here's the heresy part, folks, consider trading Tom Brady. Because you know someone out there will definitely take him and probably pay the price that the Patriots would want. And that would be, at a start, at a minimum, two number ones. At least in my opinion, because that's what Carson Palmer, that's what, you know, Cincinnati got. I have to look up exactly what Manning, what happened with Manning. I know they cut him loose, but at the same time, I don't think that's out of the question. And it may be more than that. It may be more than that. So I'd really like to kind of get your temperature on that. Not so much that you like the idea of Brady getting traded for two number ones, but my question more specifically is, can Tom Brady still take this team where it wants to go? What needs to happen for that to happen or for it not to happen in your estimation? Let me see which side of the fence, in other words, you're coming in on. webradio@patriots.com is the email address. webradio@patriots.com. Of course, the telephone number, 855-PATS-500. It's toll-free, 855-PATS-500. Love to hear your thoughts, if you can do it in 140 characters or not. At JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. And again, if you're not the Facebook friend, as we mentioned here, at the beginning of every show, send the friend request and we'll accept that. And then you can post your responses and we can also utilize the chat function on Facebook during the shows. And we'll take care of it that way. So there's four different ways that you can get a hold of the program. And don't forget our name the program. Name the Wednesday show portion of the program. And the best name is going to win a media guide today. And we'll send that out to you. So don't forget, we got a lot of things on the table today for you to get involved with. That's what we want. We want your involvement today. I really am looking for your thoughts. My thought is that Brady is still capable, even with the diminishing returns over the course of the last, you know, 3+ years now, still more than capable. But there's a couple of things that have to happen here. Number one, you'd better figure out the offensive line troubles pretty quickly, because at the rate that he's getting hit, there's not going to be much left to Tom by the end of the year. And not only does this season begin to take a different tenor to it, but maybe even the future possibilities of what Brady might be worth in the open marketplace begin to take a different look as well. I'm not advocating trading Brady. That's something for the organization to do. If I thought somebody was out there ready to offer two ones right now, I'd have to think real hard about it. But I'd also have to take a look at where we presently stand as a team, personnel-wise, and decide exactly what I'm asking you to decide today. Can Brady lead this team as it presently consists to the promised land? Where we all want to go, where this team and this organization profess to want to go. That's what I'm trying to get out of you. I'd love a little bit of a consensus. That's fine. I'd really like to know what you're thinking, because frankly, it might influence how we take other programs later this year. Maybe we need to jump into this a little more. Maybe we need to leave this whole thing alone. That's why I'm asking you the question. That's why I'm asking you the question. Okay. Patriots and the Chiefs, of course, on Monday night, 8:30 Eastern time kickoff. The Patriots have had some success on Monday, and specifically Tom Brady certainly had success on Monday nights. He's tied with Steve Young for third place all time with 42 touchdown passes on Monday Night Football. The only two players to have thrown more on Monday night than Tom Brady are Brett Favre and Dan Marino. And that's 42 touchdowns in just 18 games. So he's had really strong success on Monday nights. Now, let me throw a little cold water on that. Last time that the Patriots played the Kansas City Chiefs, was a Monday night. It was here at Gillette. It was in 2011, and the Patriots won big 34-3. But the last time the Patriots played the Chiefs in Kansas City was 2005, and the Chiefs won 26-16, and that was the night that Tom threw four picks. So I, you know, or a day I should say that the that Brady threw four interceptions. Arrowhead is a tough place to play. Now, the Patriots won in Arrowhead in 04. They lost in 05. They've won the last two times that they've played Kansas City. They won here both times at Gillette, 17-10 in 2008 and 34-3 in 2011. What does that have to do with this Monday night's game? Nothing whatsoever. Just to give you a little perspective where we're coming from and where the Chiefs are coming from. 33rd meeting overall between the Patriots and Chiefs, and Kansas City holds the edge over the Patriots all time, 16 wins to 13 for the Patriots, and there have been three ties between the two teams that once were old AFL rivals. This is the fourth time, actually, that the Patriots and Chiefs are going to meet on a Monday night. And guess what? The Patriots are 3-0 against the Chiefs on Monday Night Football. And the last one was the 34-3 win here at Gillette in 2011. Okay, just a little perspective here. Chiefs are coming off their first win of the season. They blasted the Miami Dolphins by 19. Does that mean now, if you just go by the points, does that mean now that Kansas City's 32 points better than New England? I mean, it's a question at least asking, even though it's a little asinine, but it's a question worth throwing out there because they beat Miami by 19. The Patriots lost to Miami by 13, and you do the math. I think we all realize that that's probably not the case. But we can say that, you know, it is a factor in trying to determine where these two teams presently stand. 855-PATS-500. Webradio at patriots.com, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. Yeah, Matt just sends this on Twitter. He says, weren't we in KC in 08? Brady played to open the season, but, well, we all know what happened. In 08, no, it was at Gillette. At least I'm looking at the record book here, as I recall. That was a 17 win here at Gillette. That was, of course, the game that Tom Brady went down with his knee injury, was it not? I believe it was. That was the other bit of cold water that I was going to throw on the thing. yeah, see, that was definitely it. It was definitely here at Gillette. Justin sends this on Twitter as well. He says, before crucifying Brady, the Pats should take a good look at their offense and see how they can better cover their QB. I totally and 110% am in agreement with you, Justin. I do believe that Tom needs to be able to have confidence in the offensive line in front of him before you take any looks at, okay, is he really the problem? Fix the problem as best you can in front of him. But let's just play devil's advocate here. Let's say the problem doesn't get fixed this week or next week or even in 6 weeks. Then what? Something that we might be able to consider that question with. It's a gentleman who I had a pleasure of working with a number of years ago at ESPN Radio. He still toils there as well as on ESPN Television. Mark Schlereth, former Denver Bronco as well, offensive lineman. Now a star for ESPN. He joins us here in the playbook. Mark, good to talk to you. Thanks for a little time today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Always great to be with you.
You know, the big controversy around here, as I'm sure you're aware, has to do with whether or not the Patriots have an offensive line that's even capable of protecting Tom Brady. You're having played on an offensive line capacity, you know, throughout your NFL career. I'd really love for you to speak to our fans specifically about when things get changed up as much as they changed this past year. You've got a new position coach. You've only got two players who return at their specific position on the line. How much time, or does it take a lot of time, should it take a lot of time to be able to bring things back to what you would consider a normal level? In other words, how much upheaval really should be expected when you're changing things up?
Well, certainly not as much as they're experiencing right now, and you know, that's there's scheme issues there, There's technique issues there. There's mental assignment busts there. There's a lack of pure skill there as well. So, I mean, you're dealing with, you know, it's like an onion. There are so many different layers to the issues they have up front that don't expect it to be fixed overnight. You know, there are times in the games the last 2 weeks where New England has basically said, from a coaching staff standpoint, forget it. Screw it. We can't hold up in pass protection. We got to run it every down. We got to run it every play. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of one of those. You're essentially admitting that we're not very good, and we have so many problems, so many issues that we can't fix them all. So you know, that comes down to a play calling scenario and how you actually protect that group. But even in that, there are, like I said, I've seen a bunch of assignment busts, a bunch of technique things that I look at like, if you're being coached to do that, then that's just bad coaching. So there are things on every level that are just pathetic. I'll just give you kind of a scenario here.
Sure.
And Marcus Cannon has really struggled. He's struggled mightily. Now, you know, I don't know how much Logan Mankin's contract was, and they didn't want to pay it. He didn't want to take a pay reduction, but I guarantee you they double it right now to have him back. And I know that he is a diminishing skill set too because of injuries and because he's older and stuff, but he brings some nasty to that group, and he brings, you know, some experience to that group. But Cannon has struggled mightily. But one of the things from just a pure technique standpoint, and you see it all the time, they run a fake 18 handoff play pass where Brady runs the 18 handoff, then he drops back in a play pass. It's part of Marcus Cannon's responsibility on the backside of that play is you go hard like it's 18, and then he turns his back to the defense and loops around to pick up the back end edge. And mm-hmm. He's given up a sack. He's given up a hit, maybe a multiple hits. He fell down last week trying to run that play. And just from the voice of experience, to turn your back as an offensive lineman to defenders, that's a lose. 100 out of 100 times, you're going to lose that. Playing offensive line, and I tell people this all the time, think about this. I've seen cornerbacks transition to safety. I've seen safeties transition to linebacker in this league. I've seen linebackers transition to DNs. I've seen DNs transition to D tackles. And I've seen D tackles transition to offensive line and do it pretty well. Once you play offensive line, that's the last rung on the ladder, man. You're one step away from being a fan. There is nowhere else to go. You don't go from offensive line to D-line. You don't go from offensive line to linebacker. That's it, right? You can't make another transition. So you're taking a lesser athlete that's probably the least gifted athlete on a football team, and you're asking him to turn his back in that particular play to a linebacker or a defensive end, loop around, and think you're going to block and protect a $100 million quarterback. That's not only is it impossible, but it's stupid. That's as dumb as anything that I have seen on film this year, and I've seen it multiple times. If you don't correct that, I mean, that's a simple correction right there, and you've given up one sack, one hit, and you had a guy fall down on it as well, and that's just three that I've seen. And, you know, I watch everything, but those are three that just pop out in my head right away. I could give you a half a dozen more technique things and protection bust things that I look at and go, that's bad coaching. That's bad technique. That's a lack of understanding. They're littered through the film when you watch the New England Patriots, and their performance last week was putrid.
Mark, do you feel like that's a disconnect between the current guys on the line and the new potential techniques that a new offensive line coach may be trying to instruct?
Yeah, I mean, I think you would have to make that's a pretty standard assumption that you're asking guys, you're coaching guys to do a certain thing that maybe they just don't have the capabilities to do. Some of those techniques, like I just described, you can't ask an offensive lineman to do that. You have to understand what you have and what you're coaching. You know, just because you have a system, you have to be able to take your system and adapt that system based on the players that you have trying to execute that system. You know, I mean, I played for a long time, and I was injured the majority of my career. And what saved my career and helped me become, helped me maintain a level, a high level of play in my last 6 years in Denver is we eliminated stuff out of our playbook that my coaching staff knew I couldn't do. There were certain plays as far as pulling and some power stuff that we only ran one way. We only ran power where the guard pulled from our right guard. Me as a left guard, we never ran it that way. Is it a dead giveaway? Yeah, you don't have to worry about power that way. But I couldn't do it anymore because my legs were so bad. But there are certain things I was really good at. So they're like, well, you know, he's great at zone blocking. He can come off the ball. He can still, drive people off the ball. We just can't ask him to pull anymore because he's so broken. His knees are so broken. The great coaching staffs understand that, and they implement systems based upon the players that they have that they know those guys can execute. And that's part of the whole coaching, in my mind, the coaching philosophy that has to be there. And certainly, Scarnecchia was there for a long time in New England, and they always produced, offensively, and they had good offensive lines, and they protect their quarterback pretty well for the most part. So they've got some definite disconnect issues there from a coaching standpoint, from an execution standpoint of the player. So, and like I said, you're asking some players to do some things that they're physically incapable of doing.
That's really good perspective, Mark. Mark Schlereth, the ESPN, joining us here in the playbook. And I do believe that that's the point now where this team is at. They're trying to figure out, all right, how best do we handle what we have? They can't handle X. How do they handle Y? And I think that's where we are. So that's probably why at least it's a contributing factor to the lesser numbers on offense. I'm sure it's a contributing factor to Tom Brady's less than stellar performance. It's a contributing factor to a lot of different things. But putting those numbers aside, what are your thoughts on Brady at this stage of the game and the diminishing returns that he's had over each of the last 3 years leading into this one? Is that a sign of, the natural progression of things in the NFL? Or are you of the opinion, perhaps if they get these problems on the line straightened out, there's still some life left?
Oh, I still think he can play. I mean, it was funny. As I watched that film last week, I was texting Teddy Bruschi, and I was like, hey, make sure if you talk to Tom, tell him to be careful out there. It's real dangerous. good luck.
Yeah.
I think obviously your skills diminish as a player as you get older. They can't. It's a battle of attrition, and your skills are going to diminish to a point, not to the point where you're not going to be effective anymore. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that you look at, over the course of the last few years of the New England Patriots. This offensive line and their lack of ability and their lack of, just their lack of execution is really the main focus, and the problems that he's having. Then you look at the fact that really the only guy that he really believes in or trusts is Julian Edelman. Gronkowski is back, but Gronkowski's not the same Gronkowski he was before he had the arm problems and then blew out his knee.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not controlling the middle of the field like he was. I've seen him run a lot of crossing routes. I've seen him run a lot of underneath stuff, a lot of shallow drags and things of that nature. But I really haven't seen him attack the seam down the middle of the field where he's tying up linebackers and where he's tying up safeties in the middle of the field like we were so accustomed to. And obviously that's where he hurt his knee last year, where he blew out his knee is
right.
Running down the middle of the seam. So, I don't think he's 100% back to being what he was and being healthy and having that confidence. And so, that part of the offense is not really there right now. As I mentioned, Edelman's the only guy you really have any rapport with at all. Danny Amendola is an afterthought. All the other receivers have just kind of been there or just guys. So I think you're still trying to figure out what you're going to be. And, you're trying to figure that out. Well, and then while you're trying to figure that out, you start to realize that we can't block anybody. So it's really hard to develop any continuity in a passing game when, one, you can't block anybody, and two, you're trying to develop a brand, you're trying to develop a LaFell, you're trying to develop some of the other receivers from last year, the rookies, Dobsons, and whoever else you have over there, while the only guy you have trust and faith in is Edelman,
right.
And you're trying to get Gronk back to what he was, and Tim Wright is the tight end they picked up, is his name they picked up out of Tampa Bay, and that Logan Mankins trade. You're trying to implement him into the offense too. So I mean, you basically got a layer stacked upon layer stacked upon layer of issues right now, and you're trying to fix them in the regular season. It's a tall task.
Yep, and there are these are the times of potential AFC contender, a team that, you know, we thought might have been a little bit further along than what we're realizing after 3 weeks. There's still quite a bit of work to do. Mark, thanks so much again for a few minutes today. It's great to get your insight on it, and we'll keep listening and keep watching.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You guys have a great day.
Yep, thanks. You too. Mark Schlereth, ESPN, ESPN Radio. I worked with him several years ago on the old ESPN radio game night programs, and joining us here in the playbook. And that's an outstanding start. Again, we try to bring some perspective to the situation. And as a former offensive line, who better than a guy who did it at a high level and a guy who admittedly, and I love the fact that he admitted this to all of us here. He admittedly had his limitations. It's up to the coaching staff to determine what you are, who you are, and what you can do. You can't play to the playbook. You've got to adjust the playbook to the talent that you have and to the abilities of the players that you have, even if these players are disappointing you. And that may very well be the case looking at it from the Patriots coach's perspective right now. They need to adjust. They need to make sure that the offensive linemen, who they have, that's who they have. This is what we've got to work with. Now, save for a potential trade somewhere at the trading deadline by the end of next month, and don't rule that out, you got to figure out a way to work with what you got. That's exactly what they have to do. And in your opinion, as I asked you off at the top of the program today, how does this affect Tom Brady? Can he still take the Patriots, based on who they are right now, to where the Patriots want to go? Webradio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. We're going to squeeze in a timeout. Then Bob Gretz from BobGretz.com covering the Kansas City Chiefs. That's next to the playbook.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown! Ha-ha!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Want to step inside the playbook? Hit up John toll-free on the Ace Ticket hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, back to the man, the myth, the legend himself, John Rook.
A legend in my own mind, as someone once told me. Welcome back inside the playbook as we roll along for a Wednesday. Patriots and the Chiefs, Monday Night Football. It's been an interesting, at least, couple of days from a where are we at, where are the Patriots at perspective. Time now to try to get the other perspective. Bob Gretz covers the Chiefs on his blog, bobgretz.com, and he joins us here in the playbook. Bob, thanks for a little time today. We certainly appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Let's start with where the Chiefs are at 1-2. How much of a relief was finally getting that win in Miami?
Oh, certainly a huge relief, and as you just described the Patriots, to be an apt description for the Chiefs right now, and kind of sounds like it might be for most of the NFL. They're 1-2, they played incredibly poorly the first game, played much better the second game against Denver, still lost, but then last Sunday did an overall good job at beating the Dolphins, but the Dolphins seem to be a team in some disarray right now, which always makes me wonder how the heck they won that first game against the Patriots.
Yeah, well, I think there are a lot of fans here, Bob, that are wondering the same thing, which is why the comparison is an obvious one for a lot of New England fans to make here, because clearly the Patriots overthought the situation or undervalued what Miami was, and maybe Miami did the same thing a little bit to Kansas City in return. Maybe Kansas City simply played with a little bit more of an edge and a little bit more purpose because of the 0-2 start. And it's really tough to dig yourself out of an 0-3 hole to reach the playoffs. I think the stat is that I saw 2% of teams in the NFL history have gone on from an 0-3 start to postseason play thereafter. To me, that's what's impressive the most about what Kansas City did last week at Miami is the fact they said, hey, we need to win. And they just went out and they not only won, but they did it impressively without one of their better players in Jamaal Charles.
You know, in 35-plus years of covering the NFL, I have decided that every season, all teams, all 32, they have a WTF game. that basically is what the...
Yeah.
When they lose to somebody that they... There's no way they should have lost. And the Chiefs had that in the opener with Tennessee. I think the Patriots had that in the opener with Miami. And I think they've got this thing turned around, even though they're just really battered with injuries. Most importantly, Jamaal Charles, who looks like he should be able to play Monday night, but these high ankle sprains are always a finicky thing. And Jamal's a tough guy, and he's also a quick healer. So I would bet that he would be on the field come Monday night. But they got a great performance out of Nile Davis. And their defense played well, and it's a nice win when you have 7 starters out of the lineup.
What do you feel like, and you're right about Jamaal Charles, because I followed his career very closely at Texas, being a former Longhorn at Texas X myself, and that was part of the problem with him at Texas. He never really could seem to stay healthy all the time, so I'm really happy to see him bloom into the kind of, you know, running back now that's thought of as one of the best, if not the best overall in the NFL today. He's got tremendous talent. You just brought up Nile Davis. Had 130 yards in relief role. Now, I know he had some trouble holding onto the football. How much does that penalize him from the coaching staff and the overall scheme of things? Are they less likely to rely on him because of the fumbleitis last week?
They will say no publicly, but we all know that coaches coaches, they double clutch when they got a guy carrying the ball that's laid on the ground.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had 32 carries. He recovered one of his own fumbles, but a huge fumble in the second half when you're trying to protect the lead and grind the clock. And, you know, that was a problem he had at Arkansas. And they worked hard with him last year in his rookie season. I think he went to sleep every night muttering high and tight, high and tight, high and tight. And, you know, it certainly will put a little hesitation, I'm sure. If they have to, if they feel like they want to give Charles a little bit of a break. So certainly he's a very good back to have if Charles is hurt. And he presents a great counter to Charles because he does not run like Jamal. And he runs, you know, real well in between the tackles, whereas Jamal is just outstanding at just taking the flow of that zone blocking and then seeing the crack and hitting it. Boom.
Sure.
And it's a great doubleheader if they hold on to the ball.
Right, exactly. How has Alex Smith, in your estimation, continued to progress? Has he gone where he needs to go in order to pick up and maybe expand upon, you know, 11 wins from a year ago?
I think he specifically had a horrible first game, but he has come back with two very good games since then. I think he is what he is. He is, you know, I don't know why a game manager is considered a bad thing for a quarterback, but he without a doubt is a game manager. And he's not the kind of guy that's going to put a team on his shoulders for four quarters. But if needed in the fourth quarter, he can do that. And he can throw it. And he's just, you know, his numbers are never going to be real impressive because he's such a smart quarterback. He doesn't take many chances, which is exactly what Andy Reid wants. He mm-hmm. wants a guy that's going to, especially with the lack of receivers that they have, quality receivers, he doesn't want a guy throwing it up. He wants a guy that's going to go ahead and take what's given if it's there. And last week against Miami, I don't think he threw a pass longer than 10 yards.
Yeah, that's he didn't need to. I think it was 8 yards was the longest pass that he threw. So he managed the game. He took what the defense gave him. And then flipping it over to the other side, I think the biggest concern for New England with a shaky offensive line are, you know, the guys that can come off the edge and Halle and Houston. But I know that Kansas City's had some trouble, especially with some injuries up the middle, have they not?
Well, they're certainly their linebackers, the inside linebackers, both Joe Mays and Derek Thomas, both. That's a Freudian Kansas City slip. Derek
right.
Johnson,
right.
Both out with injuries. Johnson for the year. Mays has a chance to come back. So you got a couple guys. You got a waiver claim in James Michael Johnson from last year, starting at one spot, and you got Josh Mauga starting at the other spot. He didn't even sign until the day training camp started. He didn't even play last year.
Mm-hmm.
So you know if they keep all four backers on the field, which they did a lot of against Miami, they're kind of struggling there in the middle. But Halle and Houston, and now the rookie first round pick D Ford is getting more time and more chances. It is it's an interesting trio that they can unleash in the pass rush if. Depending on Bob Sutton's imagination, and he has a vivid one.
There's some great intrigue, I think, going into the matchup Monday night as to, you know, I think both teams recognize already where they can potentially have an advantage. Question is whether or not they can execute and take advantage, and because both teams also have specific weaknesses, and be interesting. It'd be a great chess game. Again, you know, two coaches that have been good play callers in the past. Where do you feel like Kansas City looks at New England as the most important piece of information, most important territory, most important area in order for Kansas City to have success from New England? What's the biggest concern?
Certainly one of the things that makes hanging around an Andy Reid team it makes it easy because defensively they always have the same goal, and that is to stop the run.
Yep.
And if they can stop the Patriots' running game, that allows them to do so many more things in trying to pressure Brady. And you know, you figure he's not going to make many mistakes, but like any quarterback, if you can get his feet moving, if you can get him nervous in the pocket, mistakes happen. And I think defensively, that's always what they want to do. Offensively, you know, that's the other thing about Reed is they are a changing offense every week. You know, they are a game plan offense. They don't really do things the same from week to week. He did a bunch of stuff against Miami, including three tight ends all lined up side by side by side at one end of the line of scrimmage, and basically this was the block for the running game.
Right, but right.
He's used it because two of those guys are very good receivers. So when he puts three tights on the field, you're never sure as a defense whether that's a run formation or a pass formation.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, any kind of deception you can put in there and disguise what you're trying to run, which the Patriots obviously do quite a bit, I think is to the offense's advantage. Saw some of that three tight end look as well, and it was intriguing to see Kansas City do multiple things out of that. And again, they managed the game well enough, and Alex Smith managed it well enough to give them an opportunity to stay right there and sort of let Miami implode, and I think that's kind of how they won the game. And it'll be interesting to see how the Patriots decide to attack him. Conversely, it'll be even more interesting to see how Kansas City's defense decides to attack, you know, Tom Brady, because the book on Brady is pressure him, beat him. And I think that's been proven time and time again.
You know, that's a, I think that's a book you find in 32 NFL cities, always with the quarterback.
Sure.
But certainly with Brady, you know, he's much like Peyton Manning. You figure that you just can't forget him. He's not just, you know, okay, give Michael Jordan his 32 points and we'll hold the other guys.
Yeah.
Because the quarterback in both of those teams just affects so much of what happens. But I think that, again, they understand, and I think they have the ability, the talent, to put some pressure on him, especially if the offensive line situation in New England is a little bit of, I don't want to say disagree, but certainly not up to standards.
Yeah, it's definitely not up to standards, or at least previous standards anyway. Bob, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes of time today. We sure appreciate it, and thanks for the lessons.
Oh, thank you.
You got it. Bob Gretz, bobgretz.com, covering the Kansas City Chiefs. You can check out his stuff online for a little bit of a sneak peek, a little bit of an inside look just initially here at the Kansas City Chiefs, even though the game is not Sunday. It's Monday, so we got an extra day to wait this week. E-Scal, Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly, joined us from the locker room.
What's up, JR?
You know, I guess the first thing is that what we've been talking about, you know, over the course of the last couple of days has to do with whether or not this Patriots offensive line has any shot, at least in the near future, of sort of rounding back into some kind of shape to give their quarterback some protection. What's the story today, at least with not only the practice report, but questions that might have been pointed those guys' ways today?
At practice, they were only missing one guy, and that was Silver Silinga.
Silinga, yeah.
Who was hurt against Oakland, and foot, I believe.
I believe it was a foot injury, yeah.
And the only guy that wasn't out there. So that's pretty good news, I guess, from the practice standpoint.
So far, so good, right.
Yeah, and in the locker room was mostly defensive questions, not questions, but defensive interviews, defensive player interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing pretty well, and that's basically what the storyline is.
I can understand why they'd want to put the positive spin on things. We have a tendency to deal in the negative, and they want to certainly spin the positive. And we touched a bit on this briefly at the end of yesterday's show. Clearly, you know, this defense, if you go by the numbers at all, they're amongst the NFL leaders right now. Granted, they might not have played as high caliber on offense just yet as they will face later in the season, which I think is a major factor. But you still got to stop the guys who you're playing, no matter who they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Your offensive line thing, I think it's Stork's time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he needs to.
That seems to be a
consensus.
They
need to settle on that, move Connolly back to guard, mm-hmm. figure out who your left guard's going to be, whoever that is, and try to stick with that. I mean.
Where has Josh Klein been? Has he been hurt?
Inactive.
Has he been hurt?
No.
Boy, for someone
he was
who
active for one of the three games.
For someone who played as much as he did in the preseason, I find that one a little puzzling.
Me too. I thought he was going to be the guy, either right guard or I certainly didn't expect left guard because didn't think Mankins wasn't going to be here. But
right.
I'm puzzled. I don't know. I really don't know what to make of that.
Well, if you put Connolly, move him over. Who do you put over at the left guard? Do you still let Cannon do it? Because I just spent 10 minutes talking to Mark Schlereth, who, as you know, is a former offensive guard himself, most notably with Denver.
Yeah.
And he said Marcus Cannon had one of the worst games he's seen on film, maybe ever. I mean, he said it was bad, stumbling all over his feet, doing this, doing that. He didn't think Cannon's as bad a player as he saw, but clearly the Patriots have to do something to play to whatever strengths he has rather than just expect him now at this stage to live up to what they ask him to do, because he can't do it.
Yeah. I would rather see Klein in there, honestly, because I know what Cannon gives you, and I don't really care for what he gives us. So.
Neither did Schlereth.
Yeah. So that would be my thing would be left to right, Solder, Klein, Stork, Connolly, Vollmer. That's what I'd like to see Monday night. Mm-hmm. Hopefully
Is that the right thing to do in an environment like Arrowhead? I know they were playing, you know, practice today with the music blaring to get ready for the noise, but there's just no way you can get ready for this kind of an environment. This is one of the maybe two places in the entire NFL where the stadium foundation shakes when it gets noisy.
So I hear. I can't wait to experience it.
I think you'll have some fun with it.
But I don't know if they could be much worse with a change, you know, with that lineup that I just put forth and what they've had.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
As we're fond of saying right here. You know?
Some people are, yeah.
All right. Now, the other thing in direct correlation, and I do want to ask you a question about the defense before we let you go here. The direct correlation here is the question I talked about off the top of the program here for our listeners and our fans has to do with, all right, we can see the diminishing returns for Tom Brady. It's very clear over the last 3-plus years now. Each year, completion, QBR, everything, it's diminishing. Touchdowns are down, interceptions are up slightly, although that's not quite the case this year. Hasn't thrown a pick yet this year. Mm-hmm. The point is, with the way that the current offensive line is configured, is Brady the guy? Can he take them to where they want to go? And I think the reason I ask that is because this is something that I think you and I have kicked around before in the past. I heard mentioned on local talk radio again today, and I think it's worth kind of throwing out to our fans here. I mean, number one, is Brady still the guy in your estimation? Number two, do we commit heresy here and consider, you know, holding him up for the highest bidder if you can get a couple of ones for him somewhere on down the line?
This year?
Not necessarily this year. I mean, can he get you to where you want to go this year? If he doesn't get you there, do you consider moving him?
Yes, he's still one of the best players in the league. No question. I've said that a million times.
But is he the right fit for the personnel that the Patriots presently have? See, I would argue that I'm not so sure that's the case. You got to have somebody that's a little more mobile, maybe even someone right now that's more accurate. I'm just saying. I'm not saying that I hate Tom and
I want
him to go. But you and I talked about this, and we both got killed for it a year ago. And I hesitated even talking about it today. But frankly, it's pertinent. It's exactly what's going on with this team. This is the, you know, 500-pound gorilla in the closet, in the room right now. Tom Brady. He's not the same TB12 we've known and loved for more than a decade. He's not. So what do we do?
I know. Well, for this year, I don't think you do anything. But, you know, let the year play out and see how it goes. They don't have any other option this year.
Right.
They really don't have any realistic option. I'm not saying you
couldn't turn it over to Jimmy G. Now, if he gets hurt, heaven forbid, you'd have no choice. But this is not the move to make at the time to hand it off to a rookie like that, especially if you have designs on the Super Bowl.
No. Let this year play out and then take stock in the offseason.
It's got to be a consideration, though. Especially, you know, you're not doing your due diligence if you don't, you know, kick some tires and say, hey, would you?
They've done this before.
Yeah, they have.
So better to do it sooner than later. That's Bill's philosophy with a player, if you're going to move a guy.
I guess we'll find out how tied in he is to TB12 or not, won't we?
Yeah.
Especially if this season continues to muddle along and this is an 8-8 football team instead of a, you know, 12-4 or 11-5 division champion.
Yeah.
I know. You're thinking right now, oh, my God, I don't want to go there. Think of all the assignments and late nights I'm going to have.
Right.
That one. All right. I mentioned defense very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, this team has statistically been strong. We've seen a tremendous turnaround really over the first week at Miami. They've made the adjustments to the run game. Is it fair to say that part of this is because we're seeing some really, I don't want to say newfound, but let's just see they're taking advantage of some versatility we now see in a guy like Dante Hightower?
He's certainly played, I think, the most consistently on defense for the first three games.
Yeah.
And I'm encouraged to see that because I had been disappointed previously with, given where he was selected in the draft, I thought he had a lot more potential than he had showed in the first couple of years. But so far, so good, John. I mean, I will I'll be the first to admit that I was, you know, if he can continue this throughout the year, you know, then I'll be willing to say I was wrong about his ceiling. I thought he had reached it last year, but he's making a lot more plays, and I think part of that might be due to the fact that he doesn't have the responsibility of being the play caller on defense anymore. One,
right.
Because Jerod Mayo's back. And has that role back. And two, I think the coaches are letting him do more things. Maybe they feel more comfortable now to let him do more things like he used to do in Alabama, moving him all around and
I think that's
inside and outside.
Yeah.
And he feels more comfortable now. It's his third year. And I think he is taking advantage of that and making plays.
I think that's precisely it. He's comfortable in the role.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what's expected of him, and he's now beginning to flourish. He looks pretty good in coverage to me, at least what I've seen thus far. That was a major
so
hit
far,
against
yeah.
him last year.
Yeah, so far.
And we talked a lot about that a year ago, that he couldn't cover, he was a little bit of a disappointment, what have you. Seems to have solved whatever problems he's gotten.
Mm-hmm.
Does the presence of Darrell Revis behind him help that?
Fred seems to think so.
Yeah.
And we argued about that on PFW a little bit. Well, he and Paul actually really argued
yes,
a lot.
Yes, they got
about
into it.
They
yes,
did
they
pretty
did.
Well. Talked to Dante today in the locker room, and that subject came up about why he thinks he's making plays. And he credited some of his other teammates, not Revis specifically, but Jones and Ninkovich, as guys who are helping him free up. And then he also said the coaches are giving him more freedom. So I think, I mean, that's coming from the horse's mouth, so I'll take his word for it.
All right. Got time for a word of the day?
Sure.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
I always think when we first play the music, what the hell have we stepped into? Boston Symphony Orchestra here?
The cultured aspect of the
show. It's the cultured aspect of the program. And now, our word of the day.
Today's good word is jape.
Jape?
Mm-hmm.
J-A-P-E?
That's it. Short and sweet.
Jape. Mm-hmm. I have no clue on that one.
It means to...
Is that what the character on the Felix the Cat cartoon used to... Oh, that's Jeep. He used to say, Jeep, 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 Jeep.
Oh,
you don't remember that?
No, I don't.
I'm dating myself.
A little bit.
Look it up. Google it.
Okay. No, jape is a verb. It means to joke, to make light about, to kid around about. So
if you're japing, I thought that was Jake with a K. No?
Joke.
Well, yes. I understand that, but if you're jaking somebody, I thought that also meant to joke.
I hadn't heard that.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right.
J-A-P-E means...
Maybe I always got that wrong. Maybe I thought it was jake and it's jape.
Maybe. But on this playbook segment, a lot of times we jape with each other.
Is that what we do?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's very true. We do. Quite a bit. All right. That's a new one on
it's
me.
A nice short one. Easy to pronounce and spell.
Like
and
easy, pronounce, spell. Yeah. Quick.
It's your thesaurus.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Walking,
talking thesaurus. Thank you. All right.
All right, bud.
See you later.
Yep.
All right. Eric Scalavino, PFW, going to sneak in a timeout. Then I'm going to get back to the phones. We've also got a couple of other interviews still to come here on the program. We are going to hear more from the Kansas City Chiefs, Adam Teicher, ESPN.com, who covers KC. He'll join us. And Field Yates will also join us in hour number two inside the playbook.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now.
Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
Can't get enough Patriots Playbook? Find the show in the audio on demand section of patriots.com. Catch up on live episodes you missed or simply replay your favorite Playbook moments from years past. Get inside the Patriots Playbook with John Rook whenever, wherever. Only on patriots.com and the official Patriots apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad.
Playbook rolls along again for a Wednesday, and the Kansas City Chiefs, after two straight on the road, they get to come back to Arrowhead Stadium for the game on Monday night. Of course, the second of the two more successful, the 34-15 win over Miami this past Sunday, showing that, you know, A, they certainly have a ground game that has some depth to it. Also, they got a bunch of tight ends. Patriots could use one of those perhaps right about now as well. And they got guys that can get after the quarterback, which certainly might play right into their hands as well on Monday with the aforementioned problems on the offensive line the Patriots have had on the offensive line as well. We've been talking about that. Adam Teicher covers the Chiefs for ESPN.com. He joined us here inside the playbook. Adam, thanks for the time today. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. How are you doing today?
Great, Adam. Thank you. Let's start then with the game on Sunday at Miami. And the fact remains is that they kind of played with their backs to the wall. They did what they had to do. And I'm wondering if anybody really figured that they had the kind of depth, especially in the backfield and in the receiving corps, that they ended up showing that game.
Yeah. You know, I think the tight end particularly, yeah, I think, you know, everybody did know that the Chiefs, you know, that's basically the strength of their offense is their tight ends, at least with their skill people. With the backs, yeah, I mean, Joe McKnight was a revelation. I mean, he missed most of training camp, you know, really never got a chance to show what he could do, but the Chiefs kept him anyway, you know, even though there didn't look like there was going to be a role for him. You know, the Chiefs had Jamal Charles at running back and Niall Davis and rookie DeAnthony Thomas and Cyrus Gray, who they like as a special teams guy. But they kept five running backs, and McKnight was the extra. It was hard to see any role for him. But then on Sunday in Miami, Jamal Charles was hurt and didn't play. DeAnthony Thomas was hurt and didn't play. The Chiefs needed help. You know, Niall Davis is mostly a runner. He's kind of a liability in the passing game as a blocker and a receiver. And so the Chiefs needed help in the passing game, and McKnight delivered. So, you know, that was kind of a revelation for the Chiefs and, you know, something for them to work with going forward.
And you mentioned Niall Davis, 132 yards. I know he fumbled it a couple of times as well, but, you know, that has to be a pleasant surprise, especially when, you know, you know what you're going to get with a Jamal Charles. You might not have known specifically you could get that out of Niall Davis.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's played quite a bit the last several games for the Chiefs. You're going back to last season, whether you know, the Chiefs were, you know, playing a one-sided game and you know, Davis, they were trying to rest Charles, and Davis came in toward the end of the game. The, you know, you remember the playoff game against Indianapolis. Charles went out in the
sure.
first quarter with a concussion and mm-hmm. didn't return, and so Davis had to carry the load there. There was a regular season game in San Diego, last game of the season last year, where the Chiefs were, you know, basically their playoff seed was clinched, so they were resting all their starters, or not all their starters, a lot of their starters, Charles being one, and Davis got a good look then. So, you know, Davis is not an unknown, but, you know, he did have his best game, but you touched on this. The fumbles are a problem.
I mean,
if I'm the Chiefs, I can't trust him. I mean, he's fumbled three times this season, two in the Miami game. I mean, this is not a one-time thing for him. He had an extreme fumbling problem in college at Arkansas, and it's, he took it with him for sure to the Chiefs, and I just have trouble trusting the guy. I mean, I think that's a real problem for the Chiefs, and they have to figure out some way to get him to hang on to the ball because, you know, one of his fumbles, the Chiefs were just trying to kill the clock in the fourth quarter. They're up by, I think it was 12 points at the time, and they're just trying to run out the clock, and Davis fumbled. You know, he coughed it up, and the Dolphins recovered and got another chance. It didn't cost the Chiefs. The Chiefs stopped the Dolphins, but still, it's definitely an issue.
Seems to me that maybe there are some similarities in the way that Kansas City's offense has begun the season to the way that the Patriots' offense has begun the season. And I only mean that really from a statistical point of view. It's tough to really gauge where a team is, I think, through 3 weeks. I think we can all admit that. But at the same time, this team does not yet, talking about Kansas City now, doesn't seem to be as explosive maybe as we saw it on occasion last year. What do you attribute that to? Is it injury? Is it, you know, some change that, you know, might have taken place? What would you put your finger on?
Well, the big thing is the offensive line.
Okay.
You know, the Chiefs lost three regulars from their offensive line from last year to free agency, including their best offensive line and their left tackle, Brandon Albert. And then one of the five starters who's going to start, Donald Stevenson, was suspended for the season's first four games. So he's not back, and he won't play against the Patriots on Monday night. And then one of the other starters, Jeff Allen, got hurt in the season opener, hurt his elbow, and he's out for the season. So you look at it, five of the seven guys who the Chiefs used as regulars on their offensive line last season aren't around anymore, or at least won't play on Monday night against the Patriots. So yeah, they really had to patch together an offensive line. They got a rookie starting at right guard, a sixth-round draft choice, Zach Fulton, who looks like he has some potential but's not playing that well right now. They had to pull a guy off the street, Mike McGlynn, a veteran who played for Andy Reid at Philadelphia. They pulled him off the street a week or so before the start of the regular season, and he's starting for him at left guard. Ryan Harris, he was looking for a job. He's a journeyman. He was looking for a job. As training camp was started, the Chiefs signed him on the eve of training camp. He's now starting for him at right tackle. So they've really had to patch together an offensive line. And, it's a problem for them, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Sounds like a familiar refrain. We've been kind of singing that, as you would imagine, here over the last couple of weeks, because the Patriots also only have two starters back at their same position from a year ago, and part of the reason why Brady gets getting batted around, and that's why I asked the question and wondered if it was something similar. So now Patriots fans might understand the correlation between the offensive struggles and the inconsistency, let's say, in the offensive line. Of course, the biggest question is, can either team take advantage of that offensive line and put the pressure on that quarterback?
Yeah, well, the Chiefs have done a nice job. They got off a little bit of a rough start against Tennessee, but since then they've done a pretty good job defensively, and that's particularly true against Miami the other day. I mean, the big problem the Chiefs had defensively, you remember they started off so strongly last year and then just finished really terribly on defense. The biggest problem they had last season was giving up big pass plays. I mean, they'd give, four or five a game, big long pass plays, of 20 yards or more. And they've really cut that back so far this year. They're doing a lot better job of getting guys covered, getting to the quarterback. I mean, they've got, the number of sacks, I want to say it's nine, but I think they're fourth in the league. It might be 11. I don't have the stats in front of me, but they're doing a pretty efficient job with the pass rush, and they're not letting things get leaky in the back end. So that's, I think given New England's problems with the offensive line and the lack of, other than Edelman and Gronkowski, maybe consistent receiving threats. I think the Chiefs can. I think there is something they can pick on Monday night. But you can say that for the Patriots. Looking the other way, you can say that for the Patriots as well.
Sure, part of the intrigue. You're right. Nine sacks. That's tied for fourth in the league. The number that jumps out is the fact that the four of them came last week at Miami, which part of the reason why I think Ryan Tannehill is having his job status questioned this week for the Dolphins, because it seemed like the Chiefs were living in Miami's backfield last week.
Yeah, well, some of those were covered sacks. I thought he held on to the ball a couple times at least when he really didn't have to. He had an opportunity to get rid of it and didn't do it, but credit to the Chiefs, they were able to take advantage.
What beyond Justin Houston and Tamba Ali do you feel like is a strong point for the Kansas City defense at this stage right now, early in the year?
Well, they're playing pretty well up front too. They've got their nose tackle Dontari Poe is having another nice season. One of their defensive ends, Alan Bailey, is doing a pretty good job. I mean, those two are playing pretty well. The Chiefs didn't have four defensive starters against Miami because of injuries. And, two of them are out for the season. They're not coming back. And the third one's on short-term IR. He's not coming back. The fourth one is Eric Berry. We'll see where he is when the Chiefs get back to practice tomorrow. We'll see where Berry is with his ankle sprain. But, there's a good chance that the Chiefs will go into the Patriots game with four defensive starters not playing. So, they've been able to cover the loss of some pretty good players right now. Eric Berry, Derek Johnson, Mike DeVito, those are three pretty good players for the Chiefs. And the fact that they've been able to cover for them is is pretty good. But as you know, sometimes you can do that for the short term. It becomes more difficult to do it over a longer term.
Right.
You know, opponents get more familiar with the replacements. They know what to pick on, where the weaknesses are. So, you know, there are some issues there for the Chiefs, and I'm wondering how long they can keep this up, playing more than one-third of their defense is backups.
You know, I think the other amazing thing that I guess I'm just kind of coming to a realization on as I look at the Chiefs is there are several new faces on this roster. I'd say over a third of the roster changing over from what you had a year ago. So when you consider the success, that's one thing, but you got new faces, new people in different places. You know, momentum is one thing, but you still got to go out there and you have to produce. And I'm sure that speaks to some of the slow start, does it not?
You know, I think the turnover is probably less than what you might think. I mean, the dramatic area is the offensive line, like we talked about earlier. I mean,
yeah.
There's been a lot of turnover there. And on defense, because they've had to, because of the injury. So, you know, but I think, you know, other than the injured guys, you know, a lot of the guys in the offensive line, a lot of the guys who are playing for the Chiefs now are with them last year.
Mm-hmm. All right, Adam, thanks again for spending a little time with us today. It's always appreciated, and appreciate the knowledge.
Hey, anytime.
You got it. Adam Teicher, ESPN.com, covering the Kansas City Chiefs with us here in the Patriots Playbook. You know, just to give you a little bit of a flavor of where the Chiefs are, I think we know who the big guns are. I think between the rest of the program today and then as we get into prediction Thursday tomorrow, we'll probably try to discover some of the hidden gems in there and maybe a key player that you might not know a lot about right now that could certainly be a factor for the Chiefs on Monday night. Conversely, who's going to be important for the Patriots? Who's going to have to step up? It sounds to me that, again, both teams may have equal type of game plans. You might want to just kind of attack the other team. You're not going to stretch the other team defensively, considering where the Patriots are with the line and Brady's situation. You might want to go to the dink and dunk. We talked a little about this in yesterday's program. And if you do that, and you do no huddle, and you try to go the 7 and 8 yard routes, kind of like we heard that Alex Smith was doing last week against Miami. How does Kansas City combat that? And can you be effective enough in keeping the pass rush out of your backfield if you do that? I think the other thing that you have to consider for the Patriots in this instance is probably more two-back sets. Because if you see more two-back sets, then you're going to have running backs that can chip off guys like Houston and Haley who are coming around the end and bearing down on you and collapsing that pocket. Two-back sets can chip those guys off to the side before they go out on their own routes and allow Brady the opportunity to step up into the pocket a bit more and find his target. That's kind of what I'm looking at here. That I'd be stunned if we didn't see, you know, the majority of the offense run in two-back sets. Now, that'll be unique, though, because you don't see a lot of that, especially when you're going, you know, in a no-huddle or a hurry-up type of offense. You don't see a lot of it. It's different. You usually see, you know, 3, 4, and 5 wide here. I don't think you'll see that. They need the help on the rush. I'd be stunned if we saw empty backfields a lot. You might see it every now and then, but I'd be stunned because he's going to need the help at that. Plus, those two guys, the running backs, whoever they are, whether they're, you know, Ridley or Vereen or maybe James Devlin, if he's back there blocking, and I think I'd be surprised if he didn't have, you know, more than his fair share of snaps this week with the offense. You know, those are guys that can always go out into the flat and catch a ball as a safety valve as well. Interesting. It's shaping up to be an interesting game plan, and which team is going to be able to out-game plan the other, because I think we can all kind of see where the Patriots match up best, and conversely, where Kansas City matches up against the Patriots. All right, time now to get to some things that you have to say, and we'll also have Field Yates coming up in just a little bit as well, NFL insider for ESPN. But let's go to the phones, and Justin in Virginia has been hanging on the longest. Justin, thanks for taking the time today. Appreciate your holding on. Welcome into the playbook.
What's going on, man? It's my first time calling, if you don't remember.
Thank you, Justin.
You do a really good job on this show, and I really appreciate you giving a voice to all these people. But I'm going to tell you why I'm not really afraid of the Chiefs like that.
Okay.
I think that the Chiefs are inconsistent. I can't remember the last time they actually beat a playoff team, although I don't really think we're, as of now, playing like a playoff team. I think we're going to come back from this Raiders loss. Well, not loss, but win and play better. And I think the Chiefs are going to play down because they got their first win of the season.
They might, but again, I guess it really kind of depends on how much of a holdover the guys that came from last year's team have an effect on the new guys, as I just talked about with Adam Teicher. You know, can that leadership, can that veteran presence step up and seize on the momentum? They're in a tough division. They know it. They really can't afford to get too far behind Denver, because it's going to be Denver and everybody else in that division, with all due respect to San Diego. So, in that regard, do they play with a sense of urgency that they need to? Because you kind
of I think they play with a sense of urgency, but I just don't think they have the ability. I mean, they're getting blown out by Tennessee and John. And
well, again, I think you can kind of take that Tennessee game almost and put it aside. Every team during the course of the year has a WTF game. You know that. Yeah. They do.
I agree with that.
They just do. And the Patriots are as guilty of that as anybody. So, that was something that, guy from, Kansas City mentioned earlier, and he's 110% right. Everybody has that. So, put that aside. You can remember it a little bit because it was still just a couple of weeks ago, but keep in mind now, this is a team that's used to playing at a higher level. You know, you got excitement. It's Monday Night Football. You got a stadium that's literally going to rock on its foundation, I think. And that can be intimidating factors. So, you know, I certainly think that Kansas City is not going to roll over and die here. For the Patriots, it's a winnable game for New England. It's a winnable game. But the Patriots need to do the same things this week that they've done the last couple. They've got to figure out a way to turn Kansas City over a couple of times. They've got to play the field position game. And, yeah, they've got to continue doing something that they have not done yet. And they can't give up big plays. Now, Alex Smith hasn't thrown big plays. Again, he didn't have a pass longer than 8 yards last week. The Patriots are one of two teams, and I saw this online earlier today. Patriots are one of two teams in the whole NFL that have yet to give up a 20-yard play.
That's really marvelous, that I think. Because in the past years, our defense, you know, it's been a parade of horribles, and I really am happy that they're doing that. I think Revis has been a little disappointing based on who he's been going up against, but I think the defense plays solid, though. I think this offensive line is terrible.
It certainly hasn't been good lately, but let me say this about Revis. He's doing what the coaching staff asks him to do. He doesn't necessarily need to shut down. We're used to seeing, we were hoping that we got the Revis from 4 or 5 years ago. And he's still only 2 years removed from, you know, major reconstructive surgery on his knee. So to ask that he return to the way he was 4 or 5 years ago, I think is a bit much. I think the expectations might have been a little overblown on Darrell Revis. I think he's a good cornerback. I think he has the potential to be that shutdown corner that everybody expects him to be, but he hasn't had to be that yet. You know, that may change when he faces some of the elite receivers on down the schedule.
Yeah, thank you, John.
All right, Justin, thank you for the phone call. Appreciate that a lot. Here's the other Dave in Connecticut. Hello, other Dave.
Hey, John, what's going on?
How's it going?
Great show thus far, great show.
Thank you.
Couple things. I just want everyone to relax as Patriots fans. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. I'm going to stick to my prediction. This team will go 11-5.
Well, even so, that's below what most of the expectations were, Dave.
I know. I made that prediction before we got Revis, and I said that, I don't know. I mean, I just, you know, kind of, you know, when I looked at the schedule and stuff, you know, you circle losses and stuff. Obviously, it's not 12-4, but the team in some ways will be better than the teams in the last 2 years.
Based on what?
Well, I like the defense. I mean, obviously, I'm gonna ride that. And I think the defense play might make up for the offensive stuff, but they're going to get it together. The offensive line, the wide receivers, maybe Brady has to work with them on a more personal level, maybe a couple more drills in practice, a couple more meetings or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be fine.
Okay.
But I don't think it's going to be like offensive explosion or anything at any point. A lot of games are going to be dogfights, but I think they're going to come out.
Okay. And you've seen that, even though you've seen the struggles on offense, you still feel like it's going to be okay?
Yes.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, right. I only have about 11% doubt.
I like any reason why you arrived at 11%?
Obviously from what we're seeing and everything, and you factor in, like, you know, Brady's age and some people are not quite getting it, like LaFell and stuff, but, I mean, I have to speak realistically. I can't be a complete homer, so I throw in that 11%.
I like how you arrived at the number, Dave. That's good.
Yeah, a little bit more than 10%, but not quite 15.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. I like it. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
I want to say a couple more things.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Tom Brady, in my opinion, is still very much the man. Okay? Three big reasons why. Legacy. 15 years in the league, right?
Yeah, but okay. Legacy doesn't mean squat on Sundays.
Okay. Really quickly, though, 15 years in the league, a third of his time has been in the Super Bowl. To me, that's, like, unheard of.
Okay, but how does that win you a football game?
Experience.
Okay.
Okay, and I think that maybe on Brady's part, just for him personally, maybe a little bit more focused, and he's going to work on not getting angry so much. And you've seen this from other people in the league, too, Peyton Manning on occasion, and Aaron Rodgers now going through a similar thing, Drew Brees a little bit. And I think that if he works one-on-one with these guys in meetings, like I talked about, just calms down, it will be fine. It's going to get a little bit better, a little bit progressive. But, you know, Tom wants to go out there and throw four touchdowns, and, you know, with his age and everything, I understand the little lack of patience. I get it. But if he just plays like he did in 2001, puts up like a 150, one touchdown, and we get a, you know, good amount of field goals, the defense holds their ground for the entire game, we're going to win, like, you know, 90% of our games.
Well, I think he's got to do a little better than a 150, but I understand where you're going with that. All right, what else you got?
Okay, so that was the legacy. Let's put that aside.
Yep.
I love Tom's, generally, outside the anger problem, the mental stability. Okay? He's not like that spoiled rich kid like Manning that has everything he wants for Christmas. Okay? Tom has been slowly stripped of everything he's known for a long time now. I mean, there's things you can't control, you can't predict, like the Hernandez thing. Put that aside. On and off problems with Gronk's injury, so that's a playmaker down. Wes had to walk because, you know, the Patriots didn't want to play him. Recently, you know, we lost Mankins. Would have loved to keep him, but, you know, it happened. So Tom's been like the sole survivor. You know, it's like the championship teams, like it's Tom, Bill, and I think Ivan Fiev, the running back coach. I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And it's just like, and I think Ivan Fiev deserves a lot of credit. I think he's a secret, like, unsung hero. But it's just like that mental stability is there, and then he has to deal with everything off the football field with Giselle and sponsorship. So you don't blame Tom Brady for wanting to look good every Sunday, not just go out there and hand the ball off to Ridley 30 times and settle for a 150 and a touchdown. He wants to get like 5 touchdowns. He wants to look like a megastar.
Sure. Well, understand, though, that, you know, he's paid very handsomely to do what he does, so I can understand why he would want to do that. What's your third thing?
My third thing is I really don't want to ever fathom giving into the temptation. I mean, okay, so you got Garoppolo. Here's the temptation, like you talked about earlier. If somebody offers 2 number ones for Brady, that's the temptation. Or a little bit better than that, like 2 number ones and a good player, and then like a small developmental player. Don't give into the temptation. That's my third point. Okay, because I would hate to see it. Tom Brady goes somewhere, whether it's a good team, a not-so-good team, get beat up, and end up retiring. And we have to say, you know, the Red Sox dealt with the same problem with Ortiz. Don't give in the temptation to do it. Just let Brady retire Patriot, let David Ortiz retire on the Red Sox. And then, you know, eventually because he's going to, you know, him and Bill are going to have their own room in Canton. Not just a bus and just like a pitcher, their own room in Canton.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, move these guys in. They're bringing furniture. That's how much room in Canton these guys should, you know, have.
Yeah.
So I just don't fight the temptation to do it. This team will get better. You know, it's going to be baby steps.
All right. You know? Those are all very, very good comments, Dave, and very well thought out, and I appreciate your sharing all of them with us. We'll get back to taking the phone calls in a moment, but I want to say, first of all, hello to ESPN NFL insider and a former regular inside the playbook, Field Yates, who joined us here on the program. Field, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
Great, great. Staying busy, I assume, right?
Trying to. You know, just trying to figure it all out.
Seems like every time I turn around, you got your mug up on television. I'd say that's pretty good.
Yeah, just make sure you turn it on mute when I'm actually on. That's the best way to listen.
Wow. Nothing like self-deprecating humor to get it started today.
As always.
All right. What are your opinions on the problems facing New England right now with the inconsistency in the offensive line? We spent the better part of the first part of the program today talking about Tom Brady's diminishing skills and whether or not he's really the one that might be suited for the long haul, at least for New England. Might we consider, if this team flounders this year, would they consider actually parting ways with Tom Brady? I mean, I realize that's heresy to say something like that in New England, but when you consider the overall good of the team and the franchise, and Bill Belichick has always said, I'm going to do what's best for the team, I think it's something you have to consider. What are your thoughts, first of all, on the way this offensive line has started out as slowly as it has?
Yeah, I actually think the root of the issue is the offensive line, and not to oversimplify things and not to just allocate blame to five players. But I think it's really difficult to assess what other players on the offense are doing when running backs aren't getting the room they need to run and wide receivers aren't getting the time they need to run their routes because the offensive line can't give the quarterback the necessary time to go through his progression. I don't want to say that it's one particular player along the offensive line. I think collectively the group has to be better, because although Tom Brady has missed some throws, it's not be naive to suggest he's been biked out on every opportunity he's had. I think it's clear that he's also been perpetually rushed throughout this season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Patriots, I don't think the 2-1 start is not, first of all, you know, they're tied atop the division. They're going to finish probably on top of the division. I would be very surprised still if the Patriots did not punch a playoff ticket and make a deep run. So I don't think these sort of hypothetical scenarios moving off Tom Brady are even going to present themselves. That being said, I think they have some work to do in the meantime, because the way they played over the past 3 weeks offensively is not going to be enough when they face stiffer competition.
Okay, certainly, and I think a lot of fans would agree with that, or certainly are hoping for that. I think we all think that that can happen as we try to, you know, always look at the bigger picture here. I think some interesting perspective was brought on the subject. We had Mark Schlereth on earlier today, and his being an offensive lineman, he gave some insight as to some of the problems that could be taking part on that line. And, you know, when you teach fundamentals differently, it does take a little while to get used to that. Couple that with the fact that you've got some relative inexperience coming in there, you're sort of exacerbating the problem. You know, you're just kind of piling one problem onto another, and you got to, as you suggest, you got to peel off these layers to be able to get to the root of the problem. And there just happens to be an extra layer or two, I think, on the problem that is the offensive line right now. How long do the Patriots exercise patience in taking care of these problems before this costs them football games? Is this something that they can fix right away?
Well, it can take time to fix, but the thing is that what are the solutions? Solutions are to keep at it. There's really no other solution. It's not like you go out there and sign some guy off the street who's better than what you have right now. If there was a better option available in free agency, that player would be a Patriot already. He would have been a Patriot several weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sort of stay the course. The offensive line is going through a change. The position goes, and of course, some new faces along the offensive line. I think it's still early in the season. You know, I'd love to be able to rewind whatever your show was broadcasting 1 year ago at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I was on there saying something that I think to myself now, wait, really? I was really doubting that? Like, let's say it was, hey, you know, Edelman's off to a strong start, but there's no way to keep this up, right?
Right.
Like, there are probably some things that are said after 3 weeks. People think to themselves, how could I have possibly thought that? The offensive line has not been good. Nate Solder's not been good, but that's a player who I expect to bounce back and be very good. The Patriots expect him to be a top 10 or 12 left tackle in the NFL, as an example. So I think the offensive line is the problem right now. If these problems persist for the 3 to 5 games, then you might have to start to sound the alarms a little bit. That being said, I'm not moving off my prediction that the team will make the playoffs, win the division, handle.
You know, one of the things that I think is certainly part of the problem here is that, as you suggested, it does all start with this offensive line because, you know, there has been, talk about how Brady is targeting only a couple of guys, most notably Edelman and maybe Gronk when he's in there, and he's not spreading the ball around enough. And a lot of that can be because you rely on guys you know are going to be in spots when you're under pressure, and that's certainly part of it. I think the other issue is that maybe the running game, save for week two, hasn't been what they would hope to have been, but you got to have holes for guys to run into, and you have to stay consistent with a lot of that. So I think one thing certainly feeds off of the other. If the offensive line can begin to become more of a cohesive unit, it certainly stands to reason that we'll see other performances continue to improve.
Forget about it. I think this offense is going to be sort of a trickle up or trickle down effect, depending on how you want to look at it. I think that once the offensive line gets going, the passing game will be better, the running game will be better, quarterback Tom Brady will be better, and really everybody will be back to what we're accustomed to, them being. If you look at Tom Brady in terms of, like, overall skills, you don't see some sort of major regression, really. I mean, there have been a couple of throws that maybe in the past he has made more regularly, but Tom Brady is still pretty much what he's always been, and that's one of the top five or eight quarterbacks, top five quarterbacks, really, in the NFL. So I expect the Patriots to figure it out offensively. I'm not trying to give a pass what's done on the first 3 weeks, but the Patriots, I think, can be much closer to what we've seen in small doses than this year, whether it's the first week of the Miami game or otherwise. Patriots can be that offense. It takes time.
You say that about Brady, and yet he never really has been terrifically accurate with a deep ball, say 15 to 20 yards plus, and that's still the case this year, however.
That's an area that, even at 37, I think Brady could work on to improve. It's probably not the most, the strongest point of his game, but I think also Brady's capable downfield passer. I think sample size remains small. I think it's an area, though, that undoubtedly he needs to get better at this year.
All right. Fair enough. Defensively, we've certainly seen the improvement made that I think the Patriots hoped that they would begin to make when they retooled things in the offseason. Granted, they really haven't played an explosive offense yet through 3 weeks, and that's still probably, you know, to come over the next several weeks on the schedule. But tendencies certainly seem to be toward shoring things up in the middle. That could probably be directly tied to the relative health, I would think, of a guy like Vince Wilfork and a guy like Jerod Mayo in the middle. Agree or disagree?
Absolutely agree. I think the Patriots have really had standout performance on defense, and I think that two guys come to mind for me are their two first-round picks for 2012, Chandler Jones and even more especially Dante Hightower.
Mm-hmm.
Dante Hightower has been exceptional for the Patriots thus far, 3 weeks of the season. A player that has shown that he's not just a first and second down run stopper. He's an edge setter on defense. He can get after the passer. He can be a linebacker that can be used all over the defensive front. That's critically important. You add in Jerod Mayo, Vince Wilfork, you know, they're all about 7-40. And then Darrell Revis, who I think has been very good. I don't know that he's played the level that we saw him at times during his tenure with the Jets, but I don't think it's also something he's not capable of. I think that, again, we're only in three games. I think two out of three games, he's been excellent. One game last week, he was just kind of good.
How do you feel about Darrell Revis' start in New England, and are you on the side of fans that are a little disappointed in what he's done, or do you feel like he's doing what he's being asked to do?
Well, he's got his hands on the ball in two out of three games. That's a pretty good ratio if you're a defensive back. Recovered a fumble in week one, intercepted a pass in week two. I think the Patriots understand this is a rare player, and they're going to continue to utilize him and rely heavily on him. I think that, like I said, week three was not Revis' best outing, but I think this is a player that will continue to play at a high level for them and provide them with the all-pro cornerback that they certainly any defense could use, the Patriots being no exception.
Good stuff, Field. Thanks for checking in, buddy. Continued success to you, and we'll talk again soon, I hope.
Thanks so much for having me on.
You got it. Field Yates, again, ESPN NFL insider, joining us here in the Playbook. All right, we got 15 minutes left in the program before Bob Sosie takes over, so I'm going to give the time all to you because you've taken the time to answer the emails and send some tweets, and you're certainly still on the phone lines as well. We'll get in as much as we can over the next 15 minutes because it has been, hopefully, an information-packed show for you today. Here's Harley in North Carolina. Thanks for hanging on, Harley.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you? All right, what you got? And he just hung up. Hang on there, Harley. Hang on. Let's go to Trey in Memphis. Hey, Trey, you're in the Playbook.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good, man.
Hey, man, I've been listening to you for the past 30 to 45 minutes, man, and you made some great points, man, and so is some of the callers. Man, I really think that, you know, it's been a good learning curve, man, for the whole team, man, as well as the fans, because, you know, and it's a humbling experience, man, you know, for our team, because, you know, we're so used to having a whole lot of success. And I think that, you know, the early season struggles, man, really is going to make us stronger towards the end, because, you know, in the past, you know, everything was normally easy going, you know, not being in any dog fights and, you know, not being faced with a lot of adversity early on in the season. And towards the end of the season, you know, when it was time for us to face, you know, tough adversity, you know, in tough times, you know, we didn't respond very well. And I think that this is the first three games, man, is something that we can really learn from. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I, you know, if you're going to look at it certainly from a positive point of view, and why wouldn't you? Yeah, you can learn from your mistakes. Every team hopes to. That's how you get better.
Right.
But you also have to recognize that some of the problems that you might have could have been addressed and maybe not were addressed as seriously as they should have been. Now, that's what second-guessing is all about. You know, ultimately, it's up to the coaching staff and the personnel folks to be able to address those. If they don't, then they have to be held accountable for that.
Right.
So, you know, we'll wait and see how this thing continues to unfold. Right now, I mean, based on where this team started in week one and with the, you know, debacle that they put on in Miami, you'd have to like the way that they bounced back, even in spite of playing, you know, lackluster on offense, last week when you looked at it overall. I mean, 16-9 over Oakland doesn't say much, but
it really doesn't, John.
But they didn't put
in enough effort in the red zone.
That's exactly where I was going. But if those field goals turn into touchdowns, now you're talking about a game that's probably like 28-9, or maybe even 31-9. And would we all be feeling better about the Patriots if they had just converted in the red zone last week? And the answer to that is yes.
Then you know what, John? You know, going back, just really looking at the game, because I rewatch a lot of the Patriots games, man. It just, even though I watched the game on Sunday, then I replayed it last night. I feel like the game was live. You know, I feel like I was watching a live game. You know, just looking at all the mistakes, you know, that we made, and you know, my uncharacteristic mistakes. And my last question is, John, do you ever think that we'll have all of our receivers available at some point this season? I mean,
I'm not sure. You mean like, you know, active for the yes, same game? Yes. You know, I think it's just a numbers game, Trey. And part of the reason that it's a numbers game is because somebody has to be inactive. They actually have one extra receiver on the roster if you count a guy like Matthew Slater as a receiver, which they do. But because Slater also doubles over as a special teams whiz, that means somebody is not going to figure into the game plan. So
cut back on running backs. So we're taking four running backs to every game. Right?
Well, but the running backs, however, though, are going to get the ball more. You've only got three of them, you know, right. And so the running backs are going to see more touches than your seven receivers are going to see. So I think you figure out, okay, who doesn't really match up well based on their strengths and their weaknesses, and that's the odd man out week to week. And I think that's what we have to live with. This is a personnel question more than anything else. They wanted to keep the receivers that they did, and one of the inactives every week is going to be a wideout. It's that simple.
Well, all right, John, man. A great show today, man. We're going to keep this thing rolling, man. And hopefully the pass can put it together this week and next week, especially up against Cincinnati. All right, man. Have a good one.
Sounds good, Trey. Appreciate that. Here's Melvin in Tennessee. Hey, Melvin. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing?
I'm good.
Great.
It's funny, Trey. I hate to address this real quick, but I'll never get a chance to speak to many Tennessee people, Patriots fans, anyway. So,
that's great, man, huh?
Back to back. Crazy because we always talk around the same time.
So back to back from the Volunteer State. You got to love it, Melvin.
Always, man. It always happens. Man, Trey, get on the Facebook page. We can you know, I get to connect to everybody like Nick and, you know, just a lot of people call us up. So if you can, if you hear me, I'm sure.
Good.
Get on that Facebook page.
Good.
You know, I'll get in the, you know, get in the same click here.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Man, but that game, Sunday. Wow. I think nothing could, and, I mean, when I have to rush home to go watch my team play the Raiders, something's wrong. I don't know how to even explain it. Nitpicks the whole New England Patriots. I didn't get to that yesterday because I was out busy. Man, they're really playing at a level that I've never seen them play. I've not seen them play this way in a while. Things like for me. But like moving on to Kansas City, I think that it's going to be, on paper, we're better than them. I think on paper, I feel like we're a better team than them. But based on how we've been playing, you know, I think anybody could, you know, beat us right now because we're not playing to that the level we're supposed to be playing. But with that being said, do you feel like that? Do you feel like, I guess a lot of people are talking about an improved secondary? Do you feel like, John, that our secondary has really taken a step up, or, you know, based on
a step up? You mean in a positive way? Absolutely. And I think part of that is because everybody's trying to raise their game to match the level of a guy like Darrell Revis out there. I think a rising tide fills all boats in this instance. So, you know, they're trying to improve. I think McCourty stepped up his game. I think we've seen a greatly improved play from Patrick Chung, especially Patrick Chung. He's kind of taken over now as the primary guy at strong safety when I think they've been kind of, you know, thinking that Daron Harmon might end up being that guy. Now, if they can figure out, you know, the health, you know, issues at the other corner spot, you know, between Dennard and when a guy like Brandon Browner is able to come back in another week, then you're talking about real depth, and I think you're talking about a real strong point potentially for the defense. But there's definitely a step in the right direction. They're not all the way back, and they had a long way to go from a year ago, admittedly. But I definitely think they've moved in the right direction.
Okay, good. I'll say one more point, I'll let you know. About Logan Ryan, because I've heard a lot of different, like I said, I didn't get a chance to watch much of the game. I don't expect to watch them play the Raiders too much. But, like I said, I've heard a lot of ups and downs about Logan Ryan and his play.
Well, he had to start because of Dennard's absence last week. So there was no really other choice there. I mean, you could have started Kyle Arrington, but we know that hasn't worked either. And Arrington's best role clearly is as a nickel guy. Now, I would suggest to you as well that Ryan is also the same way. He's very similar and that he's probably more effective in a nickel or a dime situation. But he had to start and they exploited him. He did not have as good a game as we saw in either of the first 2 weeks, and partly that's because he was out there, so he was exploited more. He was out there for all 60 defensive snaps that the Patriots had last week against Oakland, and Oakland recognized that, and they took advantage of that. And yet, on top of that, he didn't have his best game. So, you know, I still think Logan Ryan can develop. I just hope that he doesn't have to develop more quickly than they need him to, because that's when you have a tendency for young guys to get busted. And by that, I mean, you know, ruined. You don't want a guy that clearly has some ability and talent to get ruined and get thrown into the fire too quickly. If he has to spot start, that's fine. Hopefully you can cover for him. And the ultimate bottom line is they did win the game on Sunday. They did win. But I saw enough to where I'm thinking, okay, he's not quite ready for prime time as a starter. Let's let him matriculate. Let's let him continue to come along, and hopefully the other guys get healthy and eligible again.
Good. All right, John. I'll let you go, man. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Melvin. Appreciate that. Tons of emails here. Going to try to get to as many of them as I can. Let's see. John in Kernersville, North Carolina says, Wednesday's show name should be Onward and Upward Wednesday. I don't know, Kevin. You feel free to jump in whenever you like here. Rick says, not to jump too far ahead, but I just realized the Patriots are going to have to play the Bengals coming off of a bye week while they're going to play them off of a short week. Thanks, NFL scheduler. All right, we are jumping ahead here. Let's go. Oh, here's another one. Alan says, how about Turn the Page Wednesday? I know it's a mouthful, but it sums up the Patriots' motto to move forward and look ahead at the next opponent. Alan in Vancouver, British Columbia. That's a good one, Alan. That's not bad at all. John in South Carolina says, John, why did you choose to start your look at Brady's stats in the year 2011? Seems to me 2014 Brady has a lot in common with the 2006 Brady. So do I think Brady is not as good as he once was? Of course he's not as good. He's sore. He probably hurts when he gets up in the morning, but his arm is strong. He still can move around in the pocket. It wasn't until teams started to collapse the pocket up the middle, as well as speed rush on the outside, that Brady started having problems. So can Brady be successful right now? Yes. Does he need more offensive line help than he needed in 2004? Yes. Can he do it with these receivers? Yes. That brings us to the why did they trade Mankins if they knew Brady needed more offensive line help? Well, let me commit some blasphemy of my own. Mankins had a big drop-off last year. This is not some fanboy of the Patriots talking. I watch the O-line play. I have NFL replay just so I can rewatch the film and coach's view. Last year I saw Mankins miss more plays than I've ever seen. That being said, he was still the best interior lineman we had. Patriots did what they do. They traded him when they could still get value. Patriots' record low number of attempts in two of the games tells me as long as the Patriots have the lead, they're going to try to keep Brady out of the line of fire. I think they'll do that until they can stitch together a proper line. I think Brady is here for two or three more years, and then he retires. John, that's an excellent email. Well thought out. It's a good job out of you. Brad in Fresno, California. I have no Twitter account, but how about hashtag Happy Hump Day? Fans can do the opposite of Nitpick Tuesday. We can say what it is that we're happy about, anxious to see our team, and what we're anxious to see in our team this season. That's also a good suggestion. Marcus emails, I believe Belichick has let Brady down throughout his career. From letting Branch go to Seattle to now trading Mankins, Belichick also will not pay the correct players. Example, Amendola and Tully Bantakane, and let the right ones go. His drafting of wideouts, well, here's a Tully Bantakane mention. My God. His drafting of wideouts and running backs are laughable. I mean, I'm a Gators fan. I wouldn't have drafted Chad Jackson. Brady isn't totally blame-free. His unwillingness to incorporate new receivers, you can't tell me that it's all the wideouts that have come into New England. So with that said, I give Brady this year to get it right. If not, well, trade him to a team that'll give you a king's ransom. Well, if they're going to give you king's ransom, you got to make sure that the product you're giving them isn't exactly in decline, I would think. Okay, fair enough. Let me get a couple of more in here. This one from Di, who's a Pats fan from Texas. She says, John, Tom Brady just needs better weapons and protection, period. Place him in the offense Peyton had last year or even this year, and he would be doing just as well, if not better than Peyton. This would not even be a topic of discussion. He can't bear the entire burden of the major shortcomings of this team on his own. As the team is today, I doubt he can lead the team to a Super Bowl. It's not fair to evaluate his performance based on the same standards of what we've done in the past and equate that to his decline. Still love this team and keeping my fingers crossed for a complete turnaround, be cheering my heart out for them all season. Di, that's a really good email as well. Some really good thoughts in here. Remember, we read them all. We try to return as many of them as we can. And some thoughts that we've had on Facebook and on Twitter today I'll take care of in just a moment. Right now, though, Bob Soucy's here for the Bob Soucy Show coming up in just a little bit. Man, I got to tell you, it's been all offensive line, all Tom Brady, all the time. How do we fix these problems, man? And I know that, you know, you obviously see it as well and as closely as anybody else, and realizing that, you know, nothing is ever going to be solved in just 1 week of practice or one day or with one particular move, but kind of interested on your perspective in all this, Bob.
John, I only wish I had the answer how the Patriots are going to solve it, and certainly they would love to hear it if anybody did know that answer. But it's just going to take a lot of work this week. Obviously, they have an extra day with which to prepare with the Monday night game, whereas the Kansas City Chiefs essentially turned Thursday into Wednesday, giving their players an extra day off. The Patriots got to work today in earnest in pads, and no doubt about it, personnel's an issue for them on the offensive line, settling on the right combination. We saw Brian Stork take over at centers, the rookie out of Florida State. Around the 11-minute mark of the fourth quarter on Sunday, I think we'll see more of Brian Stork. Ryan Wendell has been out the last couple of days with a knee issue. If it's not Stork, then Wendell comes back and takes over the center spot, perhaps to enable Dan Connolly to go back to guard. And Dan probably to this point has been the Patriots' most consistent and best offensive lineman. But right. Still, that doesn't solve the other issues associated with it. They've got to get better help from the tight end. When Michael Ho'omanawanui, for example, right. is asked to provide some pass protection in support of that line. But no doubt about it, I think they all recognize that it's a group effort. And it's not just the line, it's the receivers, it's the running backs in pass pro and as well in their pass routes. And it's the entire offense's unit. But as you well know, I mean, it all starts up front with that offensive line.
Would you be surprised if you didn't see changes this week somewhere on that line?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the general consensus here. Brian Stork did come in late in the game on Sunday. I certainly think that'd be a good place to start.
Well, you know, it certainly seems as though with the Patriots' draft selections that they went into the draft with a concentration or at least wanting to make offensive line an area of priority for the draft. And Stork is a guy that, coming out of Florida State as the Remington Trophy Award winner, certainly had a very impressive college resume, albeit playing through a lot of injuries during his career at Florida State and including in the offseason during the process of preparing for the combine and the draft itself. But the setback for him in training camp, to miss so much time in training camp and in the preseason, you know, you can't plan for that. You don't expect it. No doubt it threw him off schedule and perhaps threw their plans off schedule. I can think back to the days leading up to training camp when a lot of people wondered whether Dan Connolly and or Ryan Wendell would even be on this team. And, of course, now the Patriots certainly need both of them a big way.
Right. What's coming up?
We're going to talk Kansas City, of course, preview the Chiefs matchup with the Patriots. Monday Night Football, we'll hear from the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, who's been there for 21 years now, calling play-by-play for the Chiefs. Scott Zolak is scheduled to join me as well. We'll also hear from Howard Balzer, a longtime national writer covering the NFL, and he's going to chat about the league in general, but we'll ask him for the national perception from at least his point of view out in St. Louis as a guy who's pretty tied into the league, what the perception is of the Patriots and what the issues are here, but also discuss a little bit about that environment at Arrowhead Stadium in which the Patriots will find themselves Monday night.
Good stuff. All right, coming up momentarily, we close out today with this tweet from Kev from the UK. He says, Brady just needs to relax and get back to basics. Backyard football, if someone can block. That seems to be the big question of the day. Kev, thank you. By the way, he says, today's show is Prove It Wednesday. I don't know. I don't know that I've heard the one that I really like, Kevin. I'm not sure yet. There's been some. We'll go through all of them. Thank you for your submissions. And we'll pick the right one. And hopefully, if not have an answer for you today, then certainly have an answer for you by next week. All right. Bob Sosie's coming up next. Thanks again to ESPN's Mark Schlereth. Bob Gretz covers the Chiefs on BobGretz.com. Eric Scalavino, Adam Teicher, ESPN.com, covering the Chiefs. And Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider. Action packed today. Thanks for listening and thanks for taking part. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel. Mañana, Russell Baxter will be here. A couple of surprises also in store potentially for tomorrow. Must listen. Patriots.com radio.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.